All right. Let's talk to the Reverend Martin Luther King III, who is joining us. And thank you very much for being with us. I know you're particularly busy on this day, so we appreciate your time, sir.
And, thank you.
And let's talk a little bit. This is a question that came up a little bit earlier today on Wendy C. Live on the TV show here about what your father, it's very speculative, but your thoughts on your father on this day and the America of 2018 versus the America of 1968, and then years in between here, the year, or America of 2008. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, first of all, this is the year my father would have been 89 years old, and it is the 32nd annual federal holiday, always on the King holiday. I raised the question in my mind, have we achieved the dream and vision that Martin Luther King Jr. fostered? And of course, obviously the answer is no. But it does not mean we as a society have not made progress. But I think under the circumstances currently, because of the discourse and the division in our nation, that we've got to we've got to quadruple our efforts to work to uplift the nation. Because I think, based on what we see going on every few days, it seems to be a divisive climate. And I don't think anybody has the legitimate right to say what Martin Luther King Jr. would say. All I can say is through his readings and writings, we certainly know the points of view that he fostered. And he operated from a spirit of love. He operated from a spirit of support. He operated not from a negative spirit. And I think we need more of that. So as we observe this holiday, and note I did not say celebrate, because I do not believe that celebration per se is an order. I do think that there are things we celebrate, but I think we observe this holiday. I think that there's a dramatic movement occurring around how women should be treated. No one could have projected just a few months ago that this would happen. But there's a new day of coming, even though it looks like we're moving backward in relationship to issues around immigration, to issues around climate change. All of these are issues that I feel like he would be concerned about, because America is not operating at its highest level. We can and we must do better.
What about members of your own family have been critical of the president. The nephew of Martin Luther King Jr. was there at the breakfast with the president, later took a more of a critical jab, but during that moment, talked about
the service.
The signing
on Friday, yeah.
The signing. And it feels as if, I heard one member of the family say, well, if we worked with George Wallace, a segregationist, and we were able to get him to change his heart, that we can work with this president to get him to do better. Is that your view, or what is your view?
Well, my
president?
View certainly is. I certainly have a slightly different view, and not that we don't need to work. We've got to be engaged in dialogue with this White House, just as my father was in dialogue with President Eisenhower and Richard Nixon as Vice President, just as he was engaged with John F. Kennedy and Lyndon Johnson as Vice President. Same way he was engaged with Lyndon Johnson when he became president and Hubert Humphrey. So every White House needs to be engaged in. But I think my view would be that some of the rhetoric, some of the things people have asked me, was the president a racist? I don't think any of us can speak to his heart. But what we can say is the words that he said that came out of his mouth certainly is certainly racially insensitive.
Right. May I stop you there? Martin, for just one second, let me just stop you, because what's important to note here, there's a lot of going back and forth, because we're right here at the epicenter of this, because it was the Illinois Senator Dick Durbin that was the first one to identify this, and there is a debate about what it was. You know, the president said he didn't say those words. There are two Republicans now have come out and said that those weren't the words that he used. There is a debate about whether or not he said blank hole or blank house.
Yeah. It's under the same umbrella of offensiveness.
But everyone agrees that that it was strong language, and that the idea here was that he did not want immigration from places, and you have Republicans who were standing up in defense of the notion that they do not want immigration from places where there are people who are not perceived immediately to be able to help our economy. And what the thing that I that strikes me about that, and I'd love to get your thoughts on this, Reverend, is how is it possible that people with a straight face can say that? Because it is the exactly the hands and the feet and the of the people that we brought into this country that were building this country from the very beginning. The immigrants that we took in that were going to work, they weren't working with their minds initially. They were working with their hearts and their hands. And they built this country from coast to coast. I'm just going to say crap hole slash house countries that some of my relatives came from. Maybe they're nice countries now, but they weren't then. Right? Every Irish immigrant in this country should be offended by the notion that we don't want people coming here from a country that is in economic peril, because that's how they got here. Right? That's how Poles got here. That's how a lot of people got here. And this idea that we don't want people, we're going to be working with our hands coming across here. Well, hello. You always need people who are working like that. And those people, they realize what a great opportunity this is and what a great social experiment this is. And I will just quote Lindsey Graham here in his rebuttal to the president. He said, America is not a people. It is not a race. It is an idea. And doesn't that go to the heart of what your father was preaching about?
Oh, it certainly does. I don't disagree with anything that you just said. I think, first of all, there shouldn't even be a debate. My question would be, why would you wait 3 days to come out and say, well, this is not what the president said? So we know everything is politics, and we should understand that. No one on the very first day this came out, either that day or the next, Senator Durbin came out and said what was being said. So I think, unfortunately, my own Senator Perdue, was one of those attempting to justify what the president said. Now, that what the president said was destructive and disruptive and insensitive, and so we have to remove that. We've got to have some serious dialogue about racial thoughts and how those thoughts manifest and come out hurting folks. It really is about how do we find ways to bring people together, not how do we divide people and how do we, you got an entire continent because, the president wasn't clear if Africa is a continent or a country. It seemed like, at least that was what he said. But you've got an entire continent and others around the world. You go to South America, where he talked about El Salvador. This kind of behavior is not the kind of behavior that we expect from the Commander-in-Chief of the United States of America, who has to represent all the people. Either you find a way to frame your discussion that includes people, or maybe you need to just get out of the way and say, well, I can't leave because I have these points of view that are so dramatically different from the idea of America.
Yeah, and I'm going to return the favor. I don't disagree with what you just said either. And your senator, Senator Perdue, who I find that guys who want to jump in here and play these politics is the thing that is most hurtful to me. And I voted for a number of Republicans throughout my life, so I'm not in a circumstance here where I'm just a pure partisan. But
sure.
I cannot understand how it is that when we see what's going on here, we understand the racial politics. I've seen it play out in Chicago throughout my whole life.
Sure.
I know you have. I know your father. Mm-hmm. Your father most famously had, as he lived in the city of Chicago for a number of months,
right
on the west side, and he wanted to be a part of rebuilding and creating a bridge for African Americans in this city. I've seen this type of politics play out, and you just have not seen it at the national level, at this high a level. You have to go back to 1972 and to the failed campaign of George Wallace. That's the last time that this played. And I thought that this was over. And now here we are.
Right.
And I I get the dog whistle. I see what he's doing. And you know what? And Sonny Perdue sees what he's doing too. And to stand there and to defend him in a moment like this, I think it's really destructive to the Republican Party. I think it really is. I think it's hard for people, moderate Republicans, to turn around and go, yeah, okay, I can be with them. I think it's a really hard moment, and this is and just as an American, forget about political affiliation, because I'm not even really, I mean, I don't call myself a political affiliate first. I call myself an American first, mm-hmm. and I call myself political. It's about the 12th identity that I have down the line here, and mm-hmm. I just don't understand how we can't stop and, you know, just hope that by even the people closest around him going, no. I mean, I applaud Lindsey Graham for standing up in that meeting, uh-huh. which no one uh-huh. denies he did.
Sure.
And saying, that, hey, whoa. And he's from South Carolina. Lindsey Graham knows a little something about what happens with racism.
Right.
I mean, Martin Luther King III, you have to stop here, and I think you and your family, and I know Isaac Newton Ferris, who is your cousin who went to the White House, you know, he stood, it did look like a hostage video when he was standing there. It really, honest to God, did. And then he walks out onto the front lawn, and he was, you know, and that's where he referred to Donald Trump as racially ignorant as opposed to being a racist. Again, none of us know what's in his heart, but.
Right, that's right.
You gotta do you try to just act like an adult leader here and not just try to appeal to a base that is gonna be animated by that racism.
Well, there's no question about that, but I think there are far more people of goodwill who certainly would condemn the statement that was made. Those statements, because there were several that were made. And I think that what is probably happening is, for the first time, people across all sectors are being mobilized by the rhetoric, the nasty negative rhetoric that often comes out of the White House, as opposed to a more inclusive tone that could come out of the White House. And so I think the best hope we have as a nation is we got to mobilize, organize like never before, and in November go out to the polls and begin to change the complexion of Congress. I'm not talking about ethnicity-wise. Some of it may be ethnicity, but I'm talking about the sensitivity of Congress. Congress, you know, the entire Republican apparatus has the executive branch and the actually the president is trying to make it judicial also, yeah. But certainly the executive branch and the legislative branch. We've got to make changes. We've got to vote for a stopgap measure for this administration, and then we got to also work on the president's heart.
Now, I've heard you say that a couple times today, and I think that's very interesting. Yeah. Could you flesh that out for me? What do you mean?
Well, that's exactly, you alluded to this at the very beginning when you talked about George Wallace. We worked on George Wallace's heart. George Wallace was, as we all know, a staunch segregationist. And certainly in 72 when he ran, and tragically he was shot. We don't know all the reasons why, but he was shot. And at some point he began to significantly change that rhetoric. He even came back and apologized. That would be a breath of fresh air from this administration or this president. That's something that we have not seen ever, at least not thus far in this year of him being in office. Sometimes you do have to apologize for things that you say and things that you do. Hopefully we'll see some of that at some point.
Okay. Okay. I know you've had a very busy day. You may not have slept very much last night. This is a very important day for you and your family, but I mean I would love that. I would love for him to acknowledge that he may not always be right about these things, and he should be open to it goes back to everybody's playing this reel now of him, you know, saying things that are racially inflammatory, and one of them is that speech where he talks about African Americans, you know, your schools are crap and you've got the drugs and crime in your communities, and what do you got to lose? And it is just such not a even in Chicago, which has the stereotype of being that, it is just such not the truth about the majority of these communities. The reality is you got some bad actors, no question about it, in these streets. But the, you know, there are moms, there are dads, there are children who every day, all they want to do is they want to go to work, they want to go to school, they want to live in a safe place, they want to have a better future than they see currently. And that's, that, those are the dreams of those people. And to just turn around and say, Martin Luther King III, no, what do you have to lose? I can do this for you. And then say, we don't want anybody from, you know, a crap hole country coming over here that, you know, whether it's Haiti or it's the West or West Africa or wherever, you know, the two things don't add up for me. And I appreciate you. And again, you being with us today on this day, it's very, very special for you to join us. Martin Luther King III. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Thank you for the opportunity.
All right. I appreciate it.